the content of this program is intended for people who are blind, imprint impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the AARP magazine, and this is from the April and May issue, at least to start with. I'm going to start with an article today about animals. This is for animal lovers. What is it about working with creatures that brings out the wisdom in people? So they sent a photographer, Andy Anderson, across the country to find out, and I will be describing the pictures to you. Ranch animals and predators on the prowl. And this part is by Warner Glenn, who's 84. And you show him on his horse with his lasso tied to the saddle, and he looks like he's just in seventh heaven. He's at his family ranch, the J Bar A, in Douglas, Arizona. Been on this land all my years, grazing cattle. I'm happiest when I'm on horseback or on a good mule, taking care of the livestock. I helped found a group to restore the watershed and protect the grasslands. In all my time on the land, I've seen only two jaguars, but that's two more than anybody else. Before I saw my first one in 1996, they were thought to be gone from the southwest, extinct, so I was absolutely amazed. The big cat was crouched on top of a big pinnacle-shaped boulder. When it bayed, it sounded like a low, guttural roar of warning. A decade later, I saw my second one, in the shade of a big cedar tree. There'll never be a breeding population of them in the U.S. because their numbers are so few, but I sure hope I see another one. I probably will. And then again, that was Warner Glenn on his horse. Hunting hawks. This is by Jennifer Outlaw Colson, who's 55. Team power. Falconry. Hunting with a trained bird of prey has been a driving force in my life for the past 34 years. My husband and I raise and train hawks and typically hunt with a group of four. It's a little bit like managing a wolf pack because the predators don't always get along. As falconers, we have to help the hawks work through their squabbles. I think that observing their selfish motivations has made me more aware of selfishness in humans, myself included. So I've made an effort to become more sharing and inclusive. These days, I spend a lot more of my effort to train people to be better falconers. The hunting group working together is much more effective. Each hawk has its own special talents that our group can capitalize on, like exceptional vision or aerial skills. Similarly, humans are infinitely more successful when we cooperate. So we have a picture here of one of the hawks in full flight from underneath, showing all of the beautiful wing feathers. And then we have a picture of Colson with one of her Harris's hawks near her home in Pearl River, Louisiana. She keeps a detailed journal about her hawks' activities, including their flights and diets. So she has on the glove that protects her hand, but she's rubbing the hawk's tummy and has leaning her head against its head. And then the third article in this series is Diabetes Service Dogs, and this is by Mike Stewart, who's 66. I probably get along better with dogs than I do with people. I had a 25-year career in law enforcement, but I always trained dogs too. We don't use force or electric collars. There's a lot of structure, repetition, and consistency. The foundation of our program is gun dogs. We also train adventure dogs. You can take them camping. They won't eat your hot dogs or chase after a squirrel. And we've trained around 40 dogs that I know have saved lives. diabetes alert dogs. They can tell when their owner's blood sugar is too low or too high and make a sign to tell the owner. All dogs have things they can teach us. They don't have to talk about their past or worry about their retirement accounts. They enjoy life now. And the picture here is of Stuart with a few of the dogs he breeds and trains at Wild Rose Kennels in Oxford, Mississippi. So these are all labs, and we have three black labs and two golden labs. Now let's move on to an article entitled, When It Comes to Health, Be Cautious, Be Rational. This is by Catherine Alicia Georges, National Volunteer President. And although this was in the April and May episode of this magazine, it's still pretty relevant today. In recent weeks, the news has been dominated by updates on the coronavirus, sparking concern and confusion among most everyone, including AARP members. As I write this, I don't know whether the worldwide pandemic will be losing steam or reaching even more people. But as the world becomes smaller and global travel increases, we know this isn't the last time we'll face a frightening virus. As someone who has spent her life in the healthcare field, I know we are all better off looking at the situation rationally and staying as calm as we can without minimizing the threat. Being cautious and staying informed through trusted media sources are both vitally important. We have allies in this fight. The U.S. is blessed with a terrific multi-layered healthcare system, from federal agencies such as the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, to a network of state health care agencies, to worldwide hospitals, world-class hospitals. At every level, those agencies and facilities have some of the globe's best and most dedicated doctors and nurses. We can count on them and our own health care providers to help us through this crisis. And we need to make sure they always have robust resources. As of now, the Trump administration and Congress have voted to provide billions of dollars in extra funding to accelerate the development of a vaccine and potential treatment for the coronavirus, to stockpile protective equipment, and to support state and local governments as they deal with potential outbreaks. That's as it should be. But we also need to look beyond the immediate crisis and plan for the future. Older Americans are most at risk from these outbreaks. The first U.S. deaths from coronavirus were in a nursing facility in Washington state. Over 90% of coronavirus deaths recorded in China through February were of people over 50. About half of the deceased were over 70. Our federal health agencies do the research and proactive problem solving that the for-profit sector can't always afford to take on. Every year, though, funding for the CDC and other federal agencies is a political football in Washington when budget time rolls around. We should all let our representatives in Congress know that any funding cuts to these vital agencies will come at great political and social cost. Outbreaks can be scary, but we are in good hands with the talented experts who work so hard to fight infectious diseases. Let's practice calm, caution, and common sense. That's the way we'll get through this outbreak and any that follow. And now we have some big 5-0 birthdays. Of course, these took place in May and April. But we can still wish them a belated birthday. Tina Fey, May 18th. Do your thing and don't care if they like it. That's some of the advice that this self-described super nerd dispenses in Bossy Pants, the best-selling 2011 memoir that tracks her journey from the Chicago improv comedy scene to the hallowed halls of Saturday Night Live, where she was the show's first female head writer. Admired for her self Effacing Humor, and Support for Women in Comedy, Faye is the mastermind behind wildly successful projects such as the 2004 film Mean Girls, adapted for Broadway with a score by her husband, composer Jeff Richman, the Netflix series Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and NBC's 30 Rock, which satirized her Saturday Night Live years in New York City and earned 16 Emmys. She won both for writing and acting. Now she's tackling local politics by writing and producing an upcoming NBC show featuring Ted Danson about a wealthy businessman who becomes the mayor of Los Angeles. And others who had birthdays at that time: Naomi Campbell, May 22nd, was 50. Elena Kagan, a Supreme Court justice, was born on April 28th, and she turned 60. Jay Leno was born April 28th, a comedian and multimillion dollar car collector. He turned 70. Stevie Wonder, born May 13th, was 70. Herbie Hancock, born April 12th, was 80. And Clint Eastwood, born May 31st, turned 90. And now I'm going to move on to some articles from the AARP Bulletin. This one, actually from March. And on this page, there are several little interesting articles. The first, some positive news on cancer's toll in America. The cancer death rate in America fell 29% between 1991 and 2017, meaning new treatments and changes in behavior saved nearly 3 million lives, the American Cancer Society reports. In the same period, the rate at which Americans were diagnosed with some common forms of cancer showed mixed results, with men seeing an overall decline in cancer diagnoses while women were experiencing generally stable incidence rates. While diagnoses of melanoma, a form of skin cancer, have increased, new therapies have contributed to a sharp decline in the number of deaths from this cancer, particularly among those 65 and older, according to the report, Cancer Statistics 2020. And mortality rates for colorectal, breast, and prostate cancer have declined since their peaks in the early 1990s, the report says. The incidence rate of prostate cancer in men has dropped sharply since a peak in the early 90s, the report notes. Breast cancer diagnoses among women have risen slightly since 2004. Now we have Alexa. Is my brain healthy? Voice assistants may detect onset of cognitive decline, experts say. Voice assistants like Amazon's Alexa or Apple's Siri may one day read our speech patterns and memory changes to reveal a heightened risk of Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. The National Institute on Aging is investing nearly $1.2 million to see if that day can happen sooner. The federal agency gave a grant to Dartmouth Hitchcock Health and the University of Massachusetts at Boston to collect and analyze speech patterns of those using voice-assisted devices to look for early signs of cognitive impairment, according to Liang, assistant professor of computer science at UMass. Previous research suggests that speech patterns change with early-onset dementia, Liang says. But what if a home device could search for that? If we find out this works, think about the impact. The data is already there on servers. How can we use that voice data? We need our medical team to investigate the linkage between speech from voice-assisted systems and cognitive decline. AARP's experts are excited but cautious. Speech patterns present a promising area for early screening of cognitive decline, said Sarah Lentz Locke, Senior Vice President for Policy and Brain Health at AARP and Executive Director of the Global Council on Brain Health. We need to ensure people's privacy is maintained through the expanded use of technology in this way. Researchers face pragmatic and practical changes, like teaching devices to decipher unclear or mumbled speech patterns, said Dr. John Batsis, MD, of the Geisel School of Medicine at Dartmouth University and one of the study's researchers. Now, another little article on this page, Ashes to Diamonds. Cremation is now the preferred burial tradition in the U.S., says a survey by insurance agency Choice Mutual. About 76% want their ashes spread at a specific place or given to a family. Some other final wishes: mixed into ink for a tattoo, blasted off in a firework, or pressed into an LP, or yes, a diamond. Now let's move on to some articles about money. Let's start with Fraud Watch. Penny Stocks Redux, a classic financial scam, is claiming victims again. Remember penny stock scams? The investment brokers who ripped off thousands of hapless investors in the 1990s by selling them worthless stocks they are still around, and experts say they are more cunning now than ever. Though regulators barred scores of penny stockbrokers from the securities industry and dozens were imprisoned, fraudulent stock sellers are still at work, and they frequently target seniors because of their accumulated wealth. It's the Willie Sutton principle. Why did he rob banks? That's where the money is, says Lori J. Schock, Director of Investor Education and Advocacy at the Securities and Exchange Commission. About 30% of microcap fraud victims are older than 65, notes Terrence Bohan, Vice President of Investments at industry regulator FINRA, a microcap company that has very little capitalization or value. The objective of shady sellers is the same as always: to get you to buy stakes in these companies by convincing you their value is about to soar. But the stocks often have virtually no value, and there is no active trading market for some of the shares. Sometimes there's a real company behind the stocks, though it is small and of uncertain future. Other times, the company is just a shell created solely to sell bogus shares. Outrage. Census 2020 con games. The 2020 census began in April, and the scams are already showing up. Census con artists use many tactics. They might contact you by phone or email, or text you with a link to a phony website. Sometimes they even show up at your house. Their goal is to get your private information and, in some cases, persuade you to send money. How do you spot a fake? Real census workers will never threaten a fine or jail time if you don't participate, says Amy Knopfsinger of the AARP Fraud Watch Network. Nor do they ask for your Social Security number, credit card, or bank account number. You can check if a census request is legitimate at census.gov. Click on the surveys /programs, then on Help for Survey Participants. If you suspect fraud, call 800-923-8282 to talk with a Census Bureau representative, or you can contact the police. 1.7 is the number of fraud reports the Federal Trade Commission says it received in 2019. This is back to penny stockbrokers. Continue to reach out to targets by cold calling. Many phone from overseas using technology to mask their location. How do you keep yourself from being a target? Beware of unregistered brokers and guaranteed returns. These are the two most common tip-offs of a fraudulent investment scheme. Few legitimate investments offer a guaranteed profit, and brokers or firms not registered with the FINRA are waving a red flag. Go to brokercheck.finra, F-I-N-R-A, investor.org or investor.gov to find out whether the firm and broker have ever been registered and whether they've been expelled or disciplined. If they're not in the database, they shouldn't be selling to you. Be skeptical about hot industry pitches. Scammers latch on to the latest trend. Beware of pitches involving sectors in the news such as cannabis or blockchain. Biotechnology is always big with fraudsters, as are claims about renewable energy. Big plans are often fantasies. Stock hustlers may describe non-existent contracts or partnerships with firms that are household names or patents that don't exist. You can do a Google search for the SEC's EDGAR system, that's E-D-G-A-R, which will give you access to the company's financial reports. Watch out for the suspicious soft sell. Brokers who don't push you to buy right away might still be scammers. Many penny stockbrokers will spend weeks or months trying to win your trust. They may be in it for the long game, Schock explains, going for the hard sell after establishing a relationship. Listings aren't a guarantee. Though most penny stock scams involve companies not included on a legitimate exchange, those listed on NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange can still be part of a scheme. Bowen says that regulators have been a dramatic uptick in exchange-traded microcap fraud over the past 5 to 6 years. Don't be fooled by variations on the cold call. The phone is not the only way that shaders sellers reach you. Pitches come via spam email, direct mail, newsletters, and even radio or TV ads. Bowen observes that when people research companies on Facebook and Google, they sometimes encounter scammers via sponsored links. Scam artists take as much as half of the money you send them as commissions for selling you stocks that often prove worthless. That's an awfully good incentive to rip you off. You can ask the fraud team. We have a couple of questions and answers here. Question. I'm homebound and order most of my products from the large online retailers like Amazon. I got a strange email the other day from someone claiming to be with Amazon who said things I didn't order had been charged to my account. I ended up giving them my credit card number to reverse the charges. Answer. Sounds like you were targeted by a scam aimed at stealing your credit card number in hopes of using it to defraud merchants. Contact your credit card company immediately and have them look into your account and put a flag on any suspicious charges. And ask for a new credit card number. Also, change your password on your Amazon account. Always be wary of unsolicited emails. And remember, you can easily verify activity on your online retail accounts either by calling customer service or logging in online and reviewing your recent activity. Issue. My dad recently passed away. I know scammers target widows. What scam should I tell my mom to watch out for during this tough time? Answer. We're sorry for your loss. And yes, your mother is vulnerable right now. Keep an eye out for new friends, especially via social media. Explain that these could be scammers looking in to connect romantically and then steal from her. Also, she's ripe to encounter the grandparent scam, in which someone tries to dupe her into believing a grandchild is in trouble and needs money. Criminals scour obituaries looking for personal information to tailor the pitch. Talk about setting up a family code word for the grandchildren to use if they are really in distress. And now to question and answer with Twyla Tharp. And I probably won't be able to finish this, but we're going to make a start at it. People are terrified of change, period. At 78, the famed choreographer reveals her secrets for how you can keep dancing with life at any age. In your new book, Keep It Moving, you talk about what you've learned about aging by being a choreographer and dancer. Give us a snapshot. As a child, you dance around and you don't know what you're doing, but you do it all the time, so you do it really well. Then you do formal studies and learn what you can do when you're in full possession of your physical prowess. And when aspects of that start to retreat, you learn other questions to ask. So, as your body diminishes, you know how to deal with it? I don't like to say it diminishes. It alters. It changes. An astute person changes with it rather than fighting against it. What is the biggest misconception about aging? Answer: that it becomes less than what it once was rather than just the opposite, an accumulation of knowledge and experience and options. As we get older, there are more options, not fewer. A good example is Beethoven, who was deaf at the end of his life. Yet the last string quartets he wrote were amazing. He had to delve deeply into his memory bank and his mixture of things. Mixing and matching becomes much more possible with age. A lot of people think their identity is etched in stone. Her reply: yes, and that's defeating. Who wants to go on living in jail? One should be able to wake up every morning at age 75 and think anything is possible. You talk about a contract with the future. What is that? You have to be willing to change. There's so much involved with what I call status quo bias. People in the comfort zone, you need to say, on occasion, this serves me and this doesn't. It's just a habit, so let's set that aside and move on. Why do people have such a hard time doing that? 1, people are terrified of change, period. And 2, the notion that what we experience as young people becomes nearer and dearer to our hearts as we age. We keep believing that somehow we'll get the young thing back, but it's not going to happen, so you might as well revise your thinking. How did you decide to become a choreographer? I was performing with a professional dance company in New York City and felt that it wasn't all that I could do. So I went to audition for the Rockettes, and afterwards they said, well, young lady, your dancing is really quite excellent, but could you smile? Well, folks, we've run out of our time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. There were a few more things that Twyla Tharp had to say, and I'll try to get back to them later. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.